On this week's Off to the Races podcast, we'll shake things up a little bit. We'll do our Win Play Show segment via interviews. We will talk with Debbie Easter about the Virginia racing season just concluded. We'll chat with Carol Holden about West Virginia bred filly Ruby Notion, set to take on the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. And we'll visit with Ted Black, who recently interviewed 22-year-old jockey Nick Juarez, who has his first ever Breeders' Cup mount on Saturday in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Then we'll award our Big Mover of the Week, the horse that's caught our attention this week and may be moving on up. And finally, we'll turn to a handicapping roundtable featuring Derby Bill Watson, Nick Hahn, Linda Doherty, and Gary Quill as they handicap this weekend's Breeders' Cup action. Stay tuned for the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Welcome to the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. I'm Frank Vespi, and I'll be your host today as we check out racing around the Mid-Atlantic and all over the country. Special thanks to our sponsors, the Virginia Thoroughbred Association and the Virginia Equine Alliance, making Virginia racing history. Maryland Jockey Club, owners of Laurel Park and Pimlico, home of the Preakness. The Maryland Horse Breeders Association and Maryland Million Limited, Maryland, we grow horses. Street Magician, the promising sire standing at Heritage Stallions. Comlow Insurance, your course for all horse insurance. The Delaware Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, representing Delaware's horsemen. West Virginia Breeders Classics, celebrating 29 years of West Virginia bred racing. And Facing Tipton Sales Company. Thanks to all. Stay tuned for today's podcast. This is Frank Vespi, and this is the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Happy to be joined now by Debbie Easter. Debbie is the Executive Director of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, President of the Virginia Equine Alliance, and in those roles, she's one of the people who's sort of been most responsible for the Virginia racing season that just completed. Debbie, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you so much for having us, Frank. Really appreciate it.
No, it's our pleasure. It's been an interesting year, and I almost feel like you can sort of divvy up the Virginia season into three component pieces. I mean, you've got the racing at Laurel Park, which is, you know, just standard racing on a standard flat track. You've got the racing at Great Meadow, which is flat racing on a jumps course. And then you've got the racing at Oak Ridge, which was harness racing, which is something, you know, something that's maybe not exactly in the Off to the Races expertise, but it's kind of become a piece of the picture. So I guess just from an overview perspective, how did it go this year? What was the experience like running all this racing?
Sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about what our goal was with all this to start with, which was we felt we really needed to deliver some purse money and give opportunities to folks in Virginia, because obviously with the shutdown of Colonial Downs, our guys haven't had any opportunities other than that good day at Laurel last year since the last meet in 2013. Then the other thing we tried to do, even though everything was kind of pushed together in one 6 to 8 week time period, we tried to give as many different opportunities as we could, so that we weren't, each location had a little bit different set of conditions and opportunities for folks, and we tried to at least hit everybody as much as we could, so they had one opportunity this year. Overall, I think that we all feel like we've accomplished an awful lot in six months, and certainly with this the racing that we had this fall at Great Meadow and at Oak Ridge and then at Laurel, we feel very fortunate that we were able to get big fields. You know, we were basically able to deliver money to Virginians as much as possible, and you know, people really had a good time and were appreciative of the effort, and are, you know, I've never had so many people come up and say, you know, we really enjoyed the races, and we just got to figure out a way that we can do more of it.
Yeah, it's certainly I feel like the Great Meadows stuff is a really interesting experiment, and I know you all have been talking with Morven Park about racing there next year, but this sort of builds, if I understand correctly, on a vision that the head of your board, Wayne Chatfield Taylor, has had, which is a sort of, if we can't get people to go to the racetrack, maybe we could bring the racetrack to them and bring this sort of country racing feel back to Virginia, which is something that's sort of lost in our country now. Do you feel like you guys may be doing something that may be a viable option for some places?
I hope so. I think we have a long, long haul to figure out if that's going to come true or not. We know, look, let's be realistic. We're forced into this because we don't have any racing at Colonial Downs. And we do know that what works in Virginia, we have a great circuit of races that attract a lot of people, and have to be very thankful to the Gold Cup particularly two people, Dr. Allison and Dr. Griffin, who have been very much involved with the Alliance and who are willing to stick out their necks to try Paramutual at Great Meadow at the Gold Cup races. And, while we're not getting, obviously we'd love to see more handle at these races, what we are getting to do is put our product in front of a lot of people. We're giving our guys the opportunity to win some good purse money. I mean, they ran last weekend at Great Meadow for, I think the lowest purse was 35 or 40,000, up to 45 on the flat. It's starting to show. We had good entries, and you really could see the quality of the horse improving since our last efforts. The unfortunate thing on this is we get one day, and then we have to wait a while to try and make improvements and figure out how we can do things better. We know we don't have the perfect course yet. We know there's things that we can improve on. It's just that it's going to take time, and I know I'm particularly worried that, we haven't serviced. We did at Laurel, but we haven't serviced the bread and butter flat guys that are here in this state, and we got to figure out how to get that done. That's what we're hoping to be able to do at Morven Park.
Yeah, one of the interesting things, I want to go back to something you said a minute ago, which was you mentioned the sort of improving quality of the horses. And I thought one of the things that we saw that was very interesting, a number of horsemen have raised concerns or complaints about they don't really want to go to these steeplechase courses, and they're worried about this and they're worried about that. But one of the things that I thought was interesting was Complete Saint, who's been running on the flat, running at Laurel, running at tracks like that, wins the Brookmead, I believe, at Laurel, again on the flat, shows up at your most recent day at Great Meadow as part of the Gold Cup, but again running on the flat, but at Great Meadow. I mean, it seems like to me those are the kind of horses that you're going to need to get them if this is going to work. Is that a fair assessment?
I do think it is fair, and one of the complaints is that we're riding the heavyweight jockeys, and we get it, but One of the big concerns for us is safety. It does us no good to go out there and have something terrible happen. The heavier, the steeplechase jockeys, for a better way to say it, are used to riding those courses. And we feel at this point, until we can get improvements in courses and fix turns the way we want them, we think that's the safest way to do it. Now, let's face it, Lilith Boucher trains over jumps too, and Richard's obviously a good jock. He gallops horses and rides on the flat, but he's a very good jock in his day over fences too. So they're used to it. But, I believe Jill Johnson won a race with a Birdstone colt that just came out of the Phasic July sale for, I think, lots of money. That horse had never run out there on the grass like that. And those are the kinds of people I think we're going to have to, get at first. And hopefully we work this into a situation where everybody's comfortable coming from tracks all over and can see that we're trying to give away some purses and make a real good day of it. But last Saturday's racing, I think, was just as you mentioned with Complete Saint and a few other horses, was a you could see a big upgrade in the class of horse that was running there.
We are talking with Debbie Easter of the Virginia Equine Alliance, the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, here on the Off to the Races podcast. So, Debbie, where does this get us? You know, where this was obviously sort of an experimental, a little bit of flying by the seat of the pants year here in Virginia. Where does this leave us or get us for 2016?
Well, we hope that we're going to be running more days of racing in 2016. I think there's a whole lot of issues we have going on here in Virginia. One of them, you know, probably the largest issue that folks, I don't know if they realize, but you know, when Colonial turned in their license, their racing license, and their Easy Play horse license, they basically cut the revenue that this state had to use for racing in half. And so we're working on half the money. Right now, the legislation that we've got through in 2015 allowed Colonial to continue their monopoly if they on OTBs if they had a application for racing in by August 1st, which they've had, but they've asked it to be put off. It's one day a race in November 30th, and at some point, the Racing Commission in Virginia, I think, is going to have to say, hey, you know, is Colonial an impediment to what's happening in us moving forward if everybody can't come to an agreement? We'd love, obviously, we've said all along, to run at Colonial, but, you know, but we can only afford to do certain things. And so that's going to be huge. We need to have OTBs and other sources of revenue to make this thing grow, you know, a little bit more significantly. Otherwise, we're going to be stuck in about 14 days because that's about all we can afford to do.
This issue of the OTBs is a thing that certainly many people who read the racingbiz.com are concerned about, and we hear from them. You know, they want their OTBs back. So as I understand it, as you just said, we're kind of in a holding pattern waiting for the commission to decide what it's doing with Colonial Downs. Is that about right?
Sure. Colonial, you know, the legislation says they had to have an application to run racing before August 1st. They've put in a one-day application and asked it to be deferred every time a commission meeting's come up. I don't think they have any intention of running in 2015. And so now we're going on year two that with no racing. And you know, at some point, does somebody have to say enough is enough and let's go? I hear from as many people like you do that they're worried about the OTBs not being open as I do about people calling me about not having racing in Virginia.
You know, obviously, I think everybody wants to see the people have the opportunity to wager as they have had. At the same time, you'd like to see there be plentiful betting racing opportunities as well. Now, so looking into 2016, if the commission were to, you know, get somewhere with Colonial, and let's say Colonial doesn't run in 2015, would we see OTBs open in 2016?
I think that we would do. I think that the Alliance would be working its hardest to get that happening as soon as possible. And look, you know, face it, we're not experts on gambling and everything, so we probably have to get some help from people that are. But you know, some of those talks have started. You know, but there are concerns from other people where we might get help from that. You know, about coming in and making an investment in Virginia and then being legislated out in a year or two. You know, they've got to have some confidence that whatever they do is going to be there and they're going to have an opportunity to try to make a go of it.
So if you were a betting woman, Colonial does not run a day this year.
My guess is for 2015, I'd say if I'm a betting woman that'd be 8-5 that they're not going to run. But you know, who knows? As I've told you, we would love to be able to use the Colonial facility. I just, you know, unfortunately, we just haven't been able to come to terms.
Turning briefly, as putting your hat on with the Breeders Association, we got may have a little bit of Virginia bred activity taking place at the Breeders Cup this weekend.
Sure, we're very excited. We have Stellar Wynn in the distaff, and we have Valid in the Dirt Mile. Unfortunately, we lost Stick Stately Dude out of the juvenile colt race here just a couple of days ago. But you know, if you take the Virginia breds and you go looking at the others that are Virginia connected horses, I think I can come up with about 8 horses that have Virginia ties that are running in the Breeders' Cup this weekend. And, you know, that's impressive, especially considering, you know, the state of our of breeding and racing here in Virginia right now.
Yeah, and I think in a way, in some sense, tonalist is one of the most interesting sort of measures of where Virginia is. Tonalist is a Kentucky bred, but spent most of his formative days in Virginia and is owned by Virginia owners. He's a horse that probably might have been a Virginia bred. He sort of speaks to some of the issues you're raising, it seems to me.
Sure. He and another horse we lost, Appealing Tail, who was bred by Susie and Pug Hart, who are Virginians and have a farm here, but he foaled in Kentucky but was raised here. Now, he, once again, we lost him. He was supposed to run in the Dirt Mile also. But, sure, I mean, I think that's something that's happened over the years, that we have some people that breed at a quality level, that breed for the sales, that end up foaling their mares in Virginia just because, foaling their mares in Kentucky because they want to take risk out of shipping them and when they have to get their mares bred back. So we've always had that. I can't tell you that's necessarily, you know, just because of the state of the industry here in Virginia now, but, you know, those are important horses for Virginia. I mean, the Wolcotts have a beautiful farm in Middleburg, and you know, it's a running operational farm where they raise these horses and then sell them or take them to the racetrack.
So will you be rooting for the Virginia breds as they tackle the big horses in the Breeders' Cup races?
Sure, I'll be rooting for them. I might have a little bit of a conflict with Valid because I bought a horse named Red Vine for some clients. It's also running in the Dirt Mile, so my heart might, even though I'm supposed to be rooting for that Virginia bred, I'll be rooting for him. I got a little rooting interest in Red Vine also, so I got to go there too.
Well, I hope you don't find yourself too conflicted. Hey, last question, I'll let you go. Meaningful, or were you guys excited to finally, after this many years, get a Virginia bred home in what used to be called the Virginia Derby, the first Virginia bred winner of that race?
Oh, we were tickled to death. First of all, we can't thank the folks at the Maryland Jockey Club and the horsemen up in Maryland enough. I mean, we've had, I think, 2 real good experiences up there on what I would call Virginia Day. And obviously that wasn't on that race. The Commonwealth Derby was not on Virginia Day, but they've done a great job and saw the difference in the quality of horse, the quality of the handle, everything this year. But boy, what a great, you know, it just couldn't have been any better than a Virginia bred in all this nothing but discouraging news. Mostly we can have something as good as a gentleman like Mr. Coppola, who bred that horse and has a farm out in Upperville, you know, can come and win that, all that money that we give away for the Virginia Derby, and it's never happened before. So, you know, we're just tickled to death, and we hope we can make it happen again.
Well, sounds good. We've been talking to Debbie Easter, head of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, the Virginia Equine Alliance. Debbie, thank you so much for joining us on the Off to the Races podcast.
Thank you very much, Frank.
That was Debbie Easter of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, Virginia Equine Alliance, giving us the lowdown on the Virginia season just completed. Our Virginia news segments presented by the Virginia Thoroughbred Association and the Virginia Equine Alliance, making Virginia racing history. Let's turn our attention forward now to the Breeders' Cup upcoming Friday and Saturday at Keeneland in Lexington, Kentucky.
This is Frank Vespi, and this is the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio, joined at this time by Carol Holden, head of the West Virginia Breeders Classics, longtime member of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association board, and also co-host of the Trackside on Radio radio show, along with Sam Huff. Carol, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Frank.
Well, it's certainly my pleasure. Wanted to have you, we're doing a lot of Breeders' Cup things this week in the podcast, and wanted to talk with you a little bit about a horse that could have run in the West Virginia Breeders' Classics but didn't, could have run in the Maryland Million but didn't, ended up instead in the Breeders' Cup, Ruby Notion, the two-year-old filly. What would it have been like to have a filly of this quality in the Breeders' Classics this year?
Well, certainly would have been exciting, but for the West Virginia breeding program, long-term and big picture, I think it's great that they're represented in the year-end finals.
Yeah, what does it mean to, in your sense, I mean, what does it mean to a state's breeding program when horses of this caliber sort of jump up?
Certainly gives you a great deal of recognition, and you know, West Virginia hasn't had that many, but yet you can go back to actually the very first Dubai World Cup when Soul the Matter really made Cigar earn his, $5 million back then for the total purse. And, of course, Afternoon Delights, both of those horses bred by Burt Bacharach, and then had a nice Warfront colt sell at Saratoga for about $675,000 a few years ago, and they named him Giovanni Baldini, and was a graded stakes winner overseas. So anytime you've got horses like that to talk about, it certainly gives positive recognition to the program and piques people's interest.
Yeah, I was actually going to raise Giovanni Baldini because, interestingly enough, he ended up in Aidan O'Brien's barn, which I imagine has to be the first time a Virginia bred ended up in Aidan O'Brien's barn. But it really speaks to, it seems to me, that the quality of some of the West Virginia mares is really kind of qualitatively different from maybe what it was umpteen years ago. Is that fair to say?
Oh, definitely. Because of the West Virginia Thoroughbred Development Fund and, of course, the Breeders' Classics, it's provided more money, more incentive for people to go out and improve their mares. I mean, it used to be 30, 40 years ago, the whole attitude was, well, she couldn't run, so we'll breed her. And you certainly do have some unraced mares who become great producers in that. But, again, the upgrade and the quality, plus people coming in like Silverton Hill Farm, who are the owner and breeder of Ruby Notion. When they decide to be a part of the program and you have a horse like this that makes national news, it makes it a lot more fun.
Yeah, this is an interesting filly, too. I don't know how much seen of her races, but we had the chance to see her. She won the Colleen Stakes at Monmouth Park and then came to Laurel to run in the Salima, which was supposed to be on the turf, but ended up being taken off on the dirt. And she's just a rocket ship and just really, she's fun to watch because she's got a ton of speed and has been really ultra impressive in her, I think it's 4 starts to date.
Of course, she won that race by 8 lengths, and it was the same day that the Laurel Futurity was run, and she actually ran in a faster time than the colt Formal Summation, who won that, because he went in 106-1, and she won the Salima in, 105, so on a sloppy track.
She didn't. She also didn't do anything to disgrace herself when she was sent over to Royal Ascot, which means, A, the trainer Wesley Ward thought the world of her, but also, B, that she's seen some really good grass fillies in her short career going over to Royal Ascot. She runs 5th, but beaten less than 4 lengths in the Windsor Castle. So she looks like she could be a contender. What's your take on her stretching out to a 2-turn distance for the first time?
Well, there's certainly quite a bit of speed in the pedigree because her dam is by De Jour, but if you look back a little bit farther, you know, you've got she's by Elusive. Well, her sire, Great Notion, is by Elusive Quality. That's who I'm talking about. Sorry, Great Notion. But that puts both some speed and then some distance in there. But I wanted to back up just a little bit. You mentioned her going to Royal Ascot in June. You know, she had just broken her maiden the month before for $40,000 claiming price at Churchill Downs. So just the fact that she broke her maiden for $40,000 and then ended up at Royal Ascot, that's not something you see very often in a horse's past performances either. And as you said, she certainly ran creditably because the races over there are overfilled, even by their standards. I think there was 20-some horses in the race, if I recall.
Yeah, she's it was certainly a productive trip, and then she's done nothing wrong. In fact, she's undefeated in North America. So I guess the challenge here is going to be the stretch out, and you know she will already, I would say, and I think you'd agree, she will already have seen runners of the quality she's going to see because of the trip to Royal Ascot. It's really the distance that'll be in question here.
I guess we'll have to find out. One of the other things I noticed, the fact that she had such a good background of her owner, Silverton Hill Farm, has a farm just south of Louisville, and they actually have both a turf course and an all-weather course there to get her started. I'm not good enough handicapper to decide whether or not she's going to stretch out. And you mentioned, you know, she certainly ran against some good quality horses at Royal Ascot, but it is a major step up from the Colleen and the Salim, and not to take anything away from those races, but when you go from those non-graded races up to a grade one against the best in the country, you know, you just flip a coin and see what happens.
Which is what we do a lot with horse racing in any case. So is this a, will you be rooting for this filly as she tackles the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf?
Oh, absolutely, because we mentioned Giovanni Baldini. If you recall, he ran quite well in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile a few years back, and I was doing some serious hopping up and down and cheering for him, because at one point in the race, it really did look like he was going to be a winner.
Yeah, I do remember. He ran really well. He also ran pretty well, I believe, as the favorite in the UAE Derby. Anyway, well, good deal. So this should be a pretty exciting event here. We're going to be looking at Ruby Notion in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies. Carol Holden, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll hope to have you back aboard on the Off to the Races podcast pretty soon.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
And we're here on the Off to the Races podcast, joined at this moment by Ted Black, one of the RacingBiz.com correspondents following Maryland and West Virginia racing. Ted, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on, Frank.
It's my pleasure. Now, you wrote a story that I thought was interesting and kind of relates to our Breeders' Cup theme on this week's podcast on the Racing Biz Radio, which is a story about Nick Juarez, a 22-year-old jockey who a couple of months ago was a single guy who had never won a stake and now is an engaged guy and a graded stake winner and headed to the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah, it looks like good things are certainly happening in threes for Nick, you know. you know, kind of a tough time for a jockey. You know, he lost his bug right around the same time he won the Islin. But, you know, Vitaly stuck with him, gave him the mount on valid for the Islin. He won that really going away. Then a week later, he won the Sapling Stakes. The valid, by the way, was his first stakes win. So he took down a grade three for his first stakes win. Then he wins the Sapling Stakes for Jason Service at Monmouth. And then he gets engaged to his longtime girlfriend. So quite a whirlwind there for him, you know, all in one fell swoop there.
That's right. Why waste time and do it over a couple months when you could do it all in 10 days?
Right.
Now,
I
distinctly remember Nick is 22. He just started riding a couple years ago. And I distinctly remember right after he had won his first race, a trainer saying to me, you know, basically, this is a nice kid, but he's not ready yet. He needs more time. And it certainly looks like not only has he taken the time that he needs to, but he's catching some eyes. I mean, in addition to the races you just mentioned, he got a ride for Todd Pletcher at the Maryland, in the Maryland Million Classic, where he came in second on Bullheaded Boy.
Yeah, and actually, you know, gave that horse a very good ride. You know, it's one of those typical horses, you know, in the mile and eighth race where you sit off the pace a little bit and try to make one run, turn it for home. And, you know, he set the horse down for the drive and, you know, just could not catch Admiral's War Chest, who really basically went wire to wire there. And but again, you know, if you watch, go back and watch the replay, Nick looked good finishing on that horse. So had to be nice for him to do that for Pletcher. I believe he was second for another Pletcher horse up at and a stake at Monmouth as well. Yeah, I mean, for a big time trainer like Todd Pletcher to give a guy a chance to ride one of his horses and for him to do well certainly bodes well for him in the future.
Yeah, I'd say that's right. Now, you spoke with him. Does he strike you as the sort of kid who, you know, maybe he's going to have his head turned a little bit by all the, you know, being in the Breeders' Cup at 22? Or do you think he's the kind of kid who's going to be able to really focus and go about his business down there?
No, I really thought he was very mature for 22 and focused and pretty humble. And, you know, I asked him if he was going to make a weekend out of it, you know, going out for the Breeders' Cup Friday, and then, you know, maybe him and Kara would stay all weekend and watch Breeders' Cup on Saturday and just get a feel for how big the whole event is. And he said, nope, you know, I'm flying back 7 o'clock Saturday morning. He was hoping to pick up a mountain of stakes race, the Laurel Turf Cup on Saturday. Didn't get one, but he does have 5 other mounts on Saturday, and he's hoping to have, you know, 4 or 5 mounts again on Sunday. So you know, he's not patting himself on the back for getting a mount in a Breeders' Cup race at this point. He's really going about it in a real business-like manner and hoping to impress some trainers with the way he rides in the Breeders' Cup and then come back to Laurel and, you know, another day at the office, you know, with 5 more mounts there.
Now, what's your take? You think Valid's 10-1 in the morning line. Obviously, Liam's Map is going to be loom pretty large on this group. But do you think he's got a chance to get a piece of this?
You know, I do actually. You know, he's, if you look back through his PPs, he's running some pretty tough company. You know, even going back to earlier in the year when he was at Gulfstream Park in stakes races down there, and you know, he ran well. I mean, at the time, Nick wasn't riding him down there, of course. But, you know, he ran well in stakes races down there. And basically, wherever he's traveled to, he's performed well. And then, you know, what certainly would help his chances if he gets it off track. You know, he's 2 for 2 on and off track, including the Island, you know, which he won by almost 4 lengths. So if the track comes up off, that certainly moves his chances up way up. It looks like the mile is certainly going to be his best distance. You know, Liam's Map is going to be odds on from what I could see. And Wicked Strong, Leah, who's been in, you know, grade ones and been favored in grade ones, is certainly going to be tough in there. And even Tapiture won a grade 3 going a mile at Churchill Downs. But if you look at the company that Valid's been keeping from the start of the year up through this point, you know, and ran good in a 7-furlong stake at Gulfstream Park last time out, which looked like it was just a little short for him. So, but a nice setup race for the mile. So, you know, it's going to be a typical mile race. You know, if things can settle and he can stay out of trouble and he sets him down for the drive, and you know, Liam's Map doesn't get too loose on the lead or too comfortable on the lead, then you know, Valid certainly can get a piece. I mean, realistically, he looks like he should be fourth in there, but I think the Connections would be happy with third or fourth in the Breeders' Cup Mile.
All right. Well, there you have it. Valid 10-1 in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Young Nick Juarez getting his first Breeders' Cup mount. Ted Black, thank you so much.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Frank.
And now we turn our attention to the big mover of the week, that horse that caught our eye this past week and may be moving on up. And our big mover of the week will be Favorite Tale, the Pennsylvania bred who is 12-1 on the morning line for Saturday's Breeders' Cup Sprint. He gets the big mover of the week for two reasons. First is his narrow escape from quarantine. Favorite Tale is based at Parks Racing and was there when there was a positive test for equine herpes virus, which put the entire track under quarantine. But because of the hard work of the owner, the trainer, the trainer's wife, the State Department of Agriculture, and the racetrack itself, Favorite Tale was able to be tested numerous times, get out, do some training at Delaware Park while being kept away from other horses, and finally head off to Keeneland. So that's reason one that he is our big mover of the week. And reason two is the race that stamped his ticket to the Breeders' Cup, the Smile Sprint Handicap from Gulfstream Park back in July. Here's what it sounded like when track announcer Pete Aiello had the call.
There's an eighth of a mile to go, and Favorite Tale is finding more on the top. It's Favorite Tale, who sparkles in the Smile, runs away and wins it by 3.5. Work All Week second, Wildcat Red third, then Grand Short.
Favorite Tale is a 4-year-old gelded son of Tale of the Cat, out of the Grindstone mare Tricky Elaine. He was bred in Pennsylvania by Paul Conaway, owned by PJG Stable, which is Conaway's stable. He's trained by Guadalupe Preciado at Parks Racing, and he'll be ridden on Saturday in the Breeders' Cup Sprint by Javier Castellano. Good luck to Favorite Tale and all his connections. Frank Vespi, and this is the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. That was our week that was in the Mid-Atlantic region and all around horse racing. In our Win Place Show segment, we spoke with Debbie Easter of the Virginia Equine Alliance, who gave us the lowdown on the just completed Virginia season. We also spoke with Carol Holden of the West Virginia Breeders Classics about West Virginia bred Ruby Notion, who is in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. And we visited with Ted Black, the correspondent for theracingbiz.com, about Nick Juarez, the 22-year-old jockey who is riding Valid in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile on Saturday. Our big mover of the week was for Pennsylvania bred Favorite Tale, who's running in the Breeders' Cup Sprint also on Saturday. Now let's turn our attention to handicapping the races themselves and bring in our panel of experts.
Welcome to the Off to the Races podcast. I'm Frank Vespi, and we have assembled a murderer's row of handicappers to talk Breeders' Cup here for you. Let's start with, let's do this in a ladies first fashion. We'll start with Linda Dougherty, who's the racingbiz.com Pennsylvania correspondent and former daily handicapper for the Trentonian newspaper in Trenton, New Jersey. Linda, welcome.
Oh, thanks for having me, Frank.
It's our pleasure. We've got Gary Quill, who writes the GQ Approach, which appears every day of live racing in Maryland on theracingbiz.com. GQ, welcome aboard.
Hey, Frank. Good evening. Thanks a lot for having me, and looking forward to the next half hour.
Should be fun. Nick Hahn is the Virginia correspondent for theracingbiz.com and also the author of the eponymous Nick's Picks tip sheet, which has been the unlocking profits in Virginia racing for many years, and will be handicapping the Breeders' Cup on the racingbiz.com in the next couple of days. Nick, how are you? You're down there.
Yeah, just arrived. Haven't seen the racetrack yet, but I've got a couple of live reports I'll share a little bit later. And happy Breeders' Cup, everybody.
And then finally, we got Derby Bill Watson, the legendary former on-air handicapper for Virginia's former racetrack, Colonial Downs, the man who hit numerous consecutive Triple Crown races. Derby Bill, welcome.
Yes, I'm glad to hear everybody's out of quarantine in the Mid-Atlantic area.
Even one of the horses, even Favorite Tales out of quarantine. So in this segment, we're going to cover four of the races. We're going to look at the Breeders' Cup Distaff, which is the Friday feature, the Breeders' Cup Sprint on Saturday, the Breeders' Cup Mile, and the Breeders' Cup Classic. Let's start with the Longines Breeders' Cup Distaff, mile and an eighth, $2 million on the line for fillies and mares three and up. Hey, Linda, why don't we continue a ladies' first theme? You want to talk about the Distaff for us?
Sure. Well, this race actually has two fillies in it that I was waiting for them to run in this race, and one of them was Sheer Drama, and because I know from talking to the owner, they really wanted a point for this race all year, and then they got the win and you're in when they won the personal ensign. But unfortunately, to my dismay, she drew the 14. I think she's going to be moving in one slot because Untappable's out. But if you look at the stats for Keeneland month, at this distance, posts eight and out, there have been no winners. It's a 0% winning rate. So, unfortunately, I'm going to have to pick against her, which I'm probably going to use her on exotics, but I, coming from that post, I just can't use her to win. And so I kind of landed on a horse that's going to be probably go off as the favorite, and that's Wedding Toast. And the reason I landed on her is she's a perfect record at the distance, and her last race, she really won in hand. It was easy as could be in the Beldame. So I know this is her swan song. She's going to be retired after this race, and I just thought, you know, this is a good way to send her off. And the other filly I really liked was Ama Chatterbox, the Cotillion winner, but she drew down inside, and I don't know. I just don't like her as much as I do Wedding Toast, so that's who I'm going to go with. But I'm going to use Sheer Drama, and also I'm going to use Frivolous, the Vicky Oliver filly, who's 30-1 on the morning line. I'm going to use her and just see what happens.
Now, does anybody think, you know, Wedding Toast is a horse that is usually, you know, certainly her last couple of races been on the engine, any likelihood that she gets cooked up front?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a really good likelihood of a pace meltdown. There's tons of early speed in here. And I see three fillies or mares in here that can easily take advantage of that. Unfortunately, as Linda pointed out, nothing from the eight post out at the current meet has won at this two-turn distance. All three of these closers are from that point out. You have number 9, Stellar Wind, number 12, Got Lucky, and the horse that draws in because of the Untappable scratch, Peace and War. With that being said, I don't think the post positions for closers are, you know, are of any consequence. It's not going to hinder them because they're going to come out walking anyway, and they're going to just cut right over. So I'm undaunted by that statistic of no winners. Personally, of those three, has nothing to do with the fact that the horse broke its maiden at Laurel, but I think Stellar Wind is an excellent opportunity at 12-1 morning line. Who knows, might go off higher. The only time she's been off the board was in the Kentucky Oaks. Anybody has the ability to go back and look at that race. It was just a horrendous race. She was steadied early, 9 wide. Plus, on that particular day, there was nothing closing deep on that track. But yet still, those issues and the bias going against her, she still closed and finished fourth. So with this pace set up, I'm going to be all over number nine Stellar Wind.
Nick, do you want to take up for the Virginia bred as well?
Yeah, I mean, just arrived out here. I was actually having dinner with Mike Watchmaker here in the hotel. He told me today that he thought that the weather, I mean, there is a real stiff breeze out here right now. So he thinks by tomorrow the track conditions will be minimally impacted by the weather from earlier this week. They got a tremendous amount of rain out here yesterday. I think it was especially yesterday. But the and then by Saturday it'll be as if it never rained. So that's good news on the track condition out here. Stellar Wind is, I mean, this is a horse that's very near and dear to me. The horse was actually foaled a mile from my house in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is extremely rare. If anyone is familiar with the state of thoroughbreds in Virginia, that you actually have branded Virginia breds so close to at least to my residence. But I like Sheer Drama here. I think there's a path that she can take that will be beneficial in this race. I like the way this horse has been performing. And so I'm going to go with Sheer Drama here in the Distaff. I think this is one of the toughest races to pick. Wedding Toast is 4-1 as the favorite. In the morning line, you would think that this horse could be very vulnerable just by the morning line odds. I'm going to go with Sheer Drama here. I've been on this horse all summer. Stellar Wind, I think, is better than most people can appreciate. I'd love to see that horse drift down about 15 or 18 to 1 or something like that. And then I like I'm a Chatterbox as well.
Bill, what say you?
Yes, I'm not here to bash my colleagues. I'm here to bash the media. Oh, sorry, that was last night. This race is very important and vital to the handicappers nowadays with the Distaff, with the double. They tie in this into the Classic to get some payout out of the Classic that doesn't have quite the long shots in it this year, the Breeders' Cup Classic. If you're using some of the favorites, this is a great race to tie into the Classic in the double. And I haven't taken too many Virginia breds to win a big race since Secretariat and Bodemeister, but Stellar Wind stands out as a tremendous horse if the pace breaks here. And this horse will be flying late in this race. And the horse has a lot of heart and shows a lot of class. And at 12-1, I need to enhance that double payoff here. So I'm going to use Stellar Wind and shock Nick Holland, the Virginia bred Stellar Wind, on top of a Chatterbox here. I'm a Chatterbox is 9 out of 10 in the money. Wins with a grade 1 win. This horse is just a money horse. So I'm going to use I'm a Chatterbox and looking at Wedding Toast or Sheer Drama for third.
Nobody's going to take up for Calamity Kate, the horse that won the Delaware Oaks at 50-1 and then ran second in the Cotillion at 22-1, huh?
I'd like to take him up. You see you slide me 20?
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's kind of this race is probably the most challenging perhaps on the 2 days because any one of 10 of these horses could win this race, and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, they're just get lucky. I like Curlalina. I think I'm saying that horse right. You know, with the curling line there. I mean, how many horses would really surprise you here if they actually won this race? It's not too many. I can see Got Lucky winning this race. So, but you can only stop charging them. Maria, I hadn't even mentioned. And I think that's a horse from the Maryland. You know, in Maryland, everybody knows that horse. So,
yeah, she's won two graded races at Pimlico. So, yeah, that is a wide open race. And one of the interesting things which I should have mentioned in intro but did not is it's a race affected by sort of two defections. One is Untappable, who was 6-1 on the morning line, who's scratched out, won that race a year ago, might have been able to move forward and be formidable tomorrow. And also Beholder, who would have been, say, probably 4-5 if she'd entered, but actually entered the Classic instead and now turns out to be scratched out of everything with a minor bleeding problem. So a couple of defections leave that race absolutely wide open and no consensus from the handicappers, I think. So let's switch over to the sprint. And Gary Quill, why don't you actually, Nick Hahn, let's do Nick Hahn. Talk to us about the Breeders' Cup Sprint, 6 furlongs, 7th race on Saturday, and $1.5 million on the line.
Well, I mean, this has always been sort of one of the tougher races to handicap as well. But this year, I really like Private Zone in this race. In fact, Private Zone is basically my lock of the card, even though it's in a race as shaky as the sprint can be. I like Private Zone, even over Run Happy here, who has had an exceptional fall. With Edgar Prado, Private Zone has been one of the hottest horses over the summer. He's just had a really good fall himself, and real deep field here in the sprint. I'm thinking these two will probably get split, so I'm going to try and kind of put together a bet where Run Happy and Private Zone split and put a lot of horses in that play spot, try and get a different angle at the window. But these two horses are, in my opinion, the class of the sprint.
Frank, there's an objection.
You can't object, Bill, but you might as well. You already started to. What's up?
Oh, no, the objection was ladies first. You broke the triangle, and it's bad luck when you break the order of things.
Well, nobody ever accused me of being a gentleman, but since you are, let's have Linda talk.
You must have come out of the gate bad today.
That's it. I stumbled.
And Nick came out of the gate very bad if he's having dinner with Mike Watchmaker instead of all the lovely ladies in Keeneland this time of year. And Run Happy's trainer. Obviously, Run Happy's trainer would be a nice one to have dinner with. Janine Edwards and some of the other choices other than Mike Watchmaker. But that's another objection from me. Run Happy, definitely the best horse in the field. The fastest horse wins in horse racing, and this horse has proven the fastest. Stumbled out of the gate last trip up in the Phoenix and still blew him away. The King Bishop was the enlightening of this young trainer. To the scene, the horse racing scene. And this horse, if he runs his race, he should win and could possibly be a single for pick 6 and pick 3 and pick 4 players, which is a blessing this year with the $1 Breeders' Cup moving the cost of everything to $1, the pick 6, pick 3, pick 4s, handicappers having a field day with this. So we can go a little deeper with Salutis Amigas for some value here, 12-1. Late charger here if Run Happy gets tired with Private Zone and Nick up front with the speed here. Salutis Amigas at 12-1 seems to be a nice price here. So I'm going to go use them three there, and hopefully somebody comes up with a better price than Run Happy.
Linda, do you want to push for a better price?
Yeah, I sure do. Well, when I looked at this race, you see Run Happy and Private Zone, they both need the lead. And when I looked at this race, I just thought that Run Happy, he's a fan favorite and he's done everything. I mean, when you watch this horse run, he's just, the word brilliant comes to my mind when I watch him. But I think there's a horse in here, like if Run Happy and Private Zone hook up, I was looking for a horse that maybe could sit off that pace, and if one of them gets tired, just come on at the end. Okay? Well, anyway, as I was saying, I was looking for a horse that could possibly pick up the pieces of Run Happy and Private Zone, really go at it. And it's a very lightly raced horse. He's 15-1 on the morning line, and that's Limousine Liberal. Now, this horse ran into a horse, a Ramon Preciado special at Parks last time, and broke a step slow and then just missed it catching him in the Gallant Bob. That was a trouble kid that Preciado claimed for $15,000, and all of a sudden he's winning graded stakes. But this horse really, it was second to Run Happy in the King's Bishop, and I just thought, he's working well at Keeneland. He sits right off the early pace, and he's trained by Ben Colebrook, who's a very talented young trainer out there in Kentucky. So I thought 15-1, I was going to take a shot with this horse.
And GQ, what are you thinking?
No, go ahead, Linda. Finish up. Who do you like underneath?
Oh, I was going to use Private Zone, and I was going to also use Run Happy on some tickets. But I also like Saludos Amigos. I thought he was, you know, he can't knock his record either. So maybe I'll just box that group up.
Yeah, I'm going to take a different angle or a different approach to this. And I agree with Nick on Private Zone only because I've been taking advantage this week of going out on the Breeders' Cup website, and they have the live streaming of the horses on the track, and Private Zone just looks cranked to the hilt. I mean, he's hit on monster effort. But even with that said, and I'm still not sold on him, or whether or not Run Happy and him are going to kill one another. So I'm taking a different approach in that I'm looking at a price horse who is always coming running late, and maybe do a bottom key in a trifecta. I'm talking about number two, Kobe's Back. The horse always gets left at the gate. That's the way he is. They've done everything to try to fix that. But regardless of that Achilles heel he has, he always comes running. And he ran his best race of his career, getting a 109 Brisnet number in his only other race at Keeneland in April from, of all places, the two-hole. So I think the stars are aligning that Kobe's Back, you could put, if you're playing a triple, just key him in the third hole with whoever else you like in first and second and play it that way. And as far as other horses, you know, I would definitely use Run Happy and Private Zone. But I also like the 8-horse Wild Dude. And as far as another horse that doesn't need to be on the lead and comes off the pace, Salitos Amigos, obviously, he's 6-for-6 on off track. It's not going to be that, but still, like Nick earlier last year, going out to the left coast, he ran 7th only by 3, so he could definitely be in the mix. So I take that approach. Take whoever you like in the first and second hole, and key Kobe's Back in the third hole.
I got a question for you guys. I know a guy who works with Run Happy, and he has told me that Run Happy absolutely loves Keeneland, is just dead fit, and really is kind of a freak of nature. But my question is this, and all of which would make me think that he's the winner here. My question is this. He's broken a little slow each of his last two starts, had to kind of rush up to make the lead. Do you think if he breaks a little slow here, he may have a hard time catching up to the horses like Private Zone, who kind of are always on the engine as well?
Yeah, I think so. I'm thinking that these two are going to hook up, and it's going to be a tremendous duel, but one of them's going to win. And one of them is going to become very vulnerable and get beaten down a little bit, and that's going to open the door for a horse like Kobe's Back or Wild Dude or, maybe even Limousine Liberal, some horses like that to split that exacta. And, it's the Breeders' Cup, so you got to get a little creative in your handicapping anyway with these full fields and the talent that you see race after race after race. But, yeah, I think whoever wins this race is
going to
have a hell of a trip.
Is anybody concerned with that last workout? He basically ran a race in 109.4 just 9 days ago.
Yeah, I saw a video of that work, and in the first part of that work, that the rider was just about standing straight up in the saddle trying to wrestle him back.
I saw the same thing.
Yeah, I was like, "What?" I couldn't believe it. So, for him to go in that time, even after being, wrestled like that. I thought it was pretty impressive.
Yeah, he was strangling him the first couple furlongs, but then he was pushing him down the lane. I didn't understand that. But yeah, that's the one concern I'd have. You know, did he already run his race, 9 days ago?
Yeah, and I'm going to probably think that he didn't, based on what I've been hearing from that camp, that he's obviously an extraordinarily fast horse who recovers very, very quickly. And, I was told that after he won the Phoenix, a couple of the horses in the Spit Barn looked like they'd really run through the ringer, and 20 minutes after the race, his heart rate was completely normal and he looked ready to go again. So I'm not going to be too worried about, that last work. I a little bit more worried about his issues breaking and possibly hooking up on the front end. Let's turn our attention to the Breeders' Cup Mile, 1 mile on the grass, $2 million. This is a really interesting race. I thought the Europeans kind of came loaded for bear with a bunch of interesting horses. In fact, it's such a tough race that Caracanti, who won this race a year ago, is 12-1 on the morning line and probably deserves to be that. So I don't get yelled at again by Derby Bill. Hey, Linda, what do you think?
Well, there was a quote earlier this week I saw from Chad Brown, and he said that this year the Europeans really sent their A team, and he said that he thought the Americans might all be running for the minor awards, and I just thought it was a pretty direct quote from a trainer. Usually they don't say things like that, and so then I was really zeroing in on the Europeans in this race, and this filly Esoteric, it's a mare actually. She's going to be the favorite, but it's hard to go past her from what she's done. She's beaten the males in Europe in a Group One, and then I was looking up former distaff winners of this race, and all of them had beaten colts in a Group One race before they came over for the Breeders' Cup Mile. Goldakova, Miask, Ridgewood Pearl, all of them they all did that. So Andre Faub has another horse in here called Make Believe. So I just thought those two looked like the standouts. And another horse that I like, but I don't know whether he's got the class of those two, is the Woodbine Mile winner, Amanda East. And if you watch a replay of that race, the way he comes bursting through horses right inside the eighth pole, it's a really impressive burst he's got. So I thought I would use him underneath. But I'm going to use that Esoteric, is that how you say her name? But that's who I'm going to use.
Does anybody want to take up for the defending champ, Caracanti?
Yeah, I'll take up for her. it was a pretty impressive race, and no wonder she was 30-1 coming off of the races in France leading up to it. And then you look at the two races she's run so far this year, and they're a whole lot better than what she had coming into that. So, like you said, Frank, it's tough when returning champ, you're supposedly getting 12-1. But a horse that intrigues me is just to the outside, Time Test. If you look two back, the only time he was off the board, look who ran second and third. Golden Horn, who's the 4-5 favorite in the turf two races after this race, and then the Great Gatsby, who is no slouch in himself. So this horse, I think, is and if I'm going to get 6-1, Judmont Farms, I'm going to be all over him.
Bill, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking about the Arlington Million, and I'm thinking about the International Turf Festival years ago at Laurel Park, as this turf race is just totally dominated by the Europeans, like Arlington used to be, and the International Race of Laurel. Can't pronounce some of these horses, so I'm using some nicknames for them if I can come up with them. The Turf Mile here is just similar, just as we love turf racing here with big fields. Soteri, I guess, is how you pronounce the favorite here, 7-2, lukewarm favorite. European long line of winners of this Turf Mile and the Breeders' Cup come from Europe, and Andre Faber, just a mastermind bringing him over here, and I'm not going to go against that horse except for the name and the pronunciation of the name. Soteri, I guess, is the best I can do for you. Time test, I do like that horse, 12-1. Well, 6-1, sorry, looking at the wrong thing. Grade 2 score over there in Europe, too, so we're definitely Europe. The next one, Mashanish. That might not be the right pronunciation. The 10 horse, 15-1 here. First start in 11 weeks, so it's really fresh. But when they ship them over here, sometimes they shake them up. And I like this one for some value in this race. Mashanish, I'm sorry. And Cariante, I can put him in the superfecta box. 12-1 is ridiculous for that horse. Using Lasix here, too. He gets to use Lasix, so that's positive there. To help him in the turf conditions if it's still a little moist out there from the rain that they got earlier in this week.
Nick Hahn?
Well, the Euros are just, you talk about a Euro invasion here. This isn't the only wet race where, you could see a sweep of the trifecta by the Euros. It's, you look at the leading American favorite is Pepin, who we've seen run very well this summer and this fall, and he's 12-1. There's a lot of backing here, a lot of talent on the European side. I like Esoteric here as well. So I'm going to put Pepin in for third just because the horse has run very well and has that. I think this turf is going to have just the slightest amount of cut in it, but I think Teppan ran well on the soft going in Keeneland last time out. But I got Esoteric, I got Make Believe running second, and I got Teppan running third. But the Euros are just loaded on the turf here.
Yeah, they really did come big this time. Now, a couple people mentioned Time Test, who's obviously an interesting horse for Roger Charlton, comes in off of one of the Grade 2 Shadwell Joel stakes. Question for those of you who are fans of Time Test, breaking out of the 12 hole, typically not the ideal spot to be on the grass going a mile. Is this a concern for you?
Not for me. On the turf, especially the way that the style of racing here probably will come a little bit off the pace anyway. So I'm not overly concerned with the post position in the turf races at all.
Aren't there about 18 horses in the European races that they race against anyway?
Actually, when he won the Grade 2 Joel, there were 4.
Oh yeah, that was unusual for a European horse. European horses are used to running against the queen and 16 of her horses.
Yeah, and last year's winner, Frank, the Caracante, that horse came from the post 14. So that I thought that was pretty amazing that coming from that far out.
Yeah, you're right. So he did. All right, well, that gets us to the finale, the big race, the Breeders' Cup Classic, which was going to have a really interesting story of the Triple Crown champ American Pharoah versus the terrific Mare Beholder. We're not going to have that interesting story anymore because the terrific Mare Beholder is out. That leaves American Pharoah as a 6-5 favorite. The next lowest odds, I believe, are Honor Code and Tonalist, both 6-1. Linda, because I can't get yelled at by Derby Bill, what do you think?
Well, it's hard to go. Personally, I'm going to be rooting for American Pharoah. And now with the holder out, you got to think that he's going to be out there. But, isn't really nobody looks like that's going to run with him early. I know Frosted did in the Travers, and it didn't work out that well for him, but I kind of see American Pharoah just wire this field, but and not that I would be unhappy about that, just the price would be real short. But I really liked the way Frosted finished up in the PA Derby, I can still see him coming down to the wire in that last eighth of a mile. He just looked like somebody gave him a hot foot the way he came, you know, across that line. So I was actually going to pick Frosted on top had Beholder stayed in. But I'm going to take American Pharoah, and then I'm going to use Frosted, and then I'm going to use Keen Ice to in the third slot. And the three-year-olds, like last year, the first six spots in the Classic were taken by three-year-olds. So I'm going to stick to the three-year-old theme here, American Pharoah over Frosted and Keen Ice. And, you know, if American Pharoah has a bad day, maybe the PA Derby winner will be able to win this, like the last year, the Bayern.
GQ, you agree with that assessment?
Actually, I do. You know, Beholder being in would have been not only a nice storyline, but would have given all the horses that have no early speed a fighting chance in this race. But with that being said, I'm not going to go all in on American Pharoah. All right, so let me pause so everybody can get up off their chair and they fell over. I'm going with a horse that's making his fifth career start, number seven, Smooth Roller. He's no slouch. He ran a 110 Brisnet number and found out today through the grapevine that Tyler Bay said the horse seemed like he wasn't even trying when he pulled away from Opportunity and Bayern. And the horse is a four-year-old, obviously a late bloomer since he just broke his maiden in June. But Tyler Bayes is 3-for-3 on him. He does have a little bit of early speed. So, you know, who knows if American Pharoah is going to go gate the wire with everybody. Maybe this horse can complete a cold exacta. And obviously, all these odds are going to change with Beholder being out, but I think 10-1 is still a fair price on a horse that doesn't have the same closing style it seems like everybody else in this race has. I like American Pharoah with Smooth Roller, and I think Honor Code, his first opportunity going a mile and a quarter, he's going to show that his bloodlines is exactly he wants that distance. And hopefully he'll fire. I say hopefully because on Belmont Day when he won impressively in the Metropolitan, he just had a perfect setup. That field was loaded with speed. And I think that's why he won so impressively. But you know, who knows? You know, somebody's got to run second and third if American Pharoah is, you know, it's going to be a walkover, right? So I would go with American Pharoah, Smooth Roller, and Honor Code, and just a, you know, ice cold try.
So there's a ringing endorsement. Somebody's got to run second and third. Nick and Bill, do you guys want to either take up for somebody else in the top spot or more ringingly endorse somebody underneath?
Well, it's hard for me to follow GQ. A man to follow GQ is kind of tough, and you know, even nowadays. But American Pharoah, a little story here real quick, was the American Pharoah loved this horse since I've seen him. Derek Simon from Twin Spires, I guess the Twin Spires, bet me a bet of protein bars that American Pharoah wouldn't finish in the top three in the Kentucky Derby. And protein bars, if you've seen me on television before years ago, you know you need a 50-inch TV to see most of me. So protein bars is just near and dear to me, so I can't go against American Pharoah on the reason, on the food reason. I mean, my food reasoning is I go back to 25-cent hot dog days at racetracks. I mean, this is important to people. You know, I go all the way down to Oaklawn just for the brisket, the 50-cent briskets. I mean, there's reasons to keep people like me around. But American Pharoah, the horse is a mile and a half to Belmont was a question. They questioned him. They questioned him at Pimlico. They questioned him at Kentucky Derby. I'm not going to question him here. The only question was the graveyard of favorites. He lost to Travers after running 4 weeks after the Haskell, which I'm not going to question Baffert or anybody on that. I mean, he tried. He wanted to do it for several reasons because the horse is retiring. I mean, Honor Code, Tone List, and Keen Ice have dropped. The update was 4-5 on American Pharoah. Honor Code was 5-1. Tunnelist is down to 4-1. And Keen Ice is 8-1 in the updated odds after the scratch. So there's absolutely not a lot of value behind American Pharoah in this race. So I'm going to try to use him in the pick six, the $1 pick six this year, which if you can get that pick six, I mean, three payoffs in the pick six paid life-changing, and you know, I could get an upgrade for this microphone for your podcast there.
Well, that's really what I'm focused on. But I do want to point out that you can't get handicapping insight like bet on this horse because of protein bars anywhere other than the Off to the Races podcast here on the Racing Biz Radio. Nick Hine, could you take up for maybe the Virginia Rays Tonalist?
I don't have a food angle in this race, but I do have. The holder was certainly a disappointment to learn of today because it just would have added so much more to this race. I wasn't ready to crown her as Zenyatta or anything yet, but it certainly was an interesting angle, and it certainly has a major handicapping impact on the race. But the Tonalist is, it was last year. Driving up to Belmont Park, and I got to see the farm where Tonalist was, spent the first 18 months of his life. And it's just a real interesting story. I talked to Lauren and Renee Wolcott last weekend up at the International Gold Cup. They basically bred this horse out of the steeplechase fields. You know, their interest, the reason they moved to Virginia was for steeplechase racing, and lo and behold, they end up breeding the horse that denied California Chrome the Triple Crown. So it's certainly an interesting angle here, but I'm going to go against Tonalist here. American Pharoah, just like Linda said, I think there's a lot of sentimental reasons to back this horse. I'm going to try and beat him. I think his wings may have come off a little bit in the Travers, and this will be a swan song in racing. But, you know, Keen Ice has been improving with every race. And before, you know, American Pharoah looked very good in the spring, and there was no reason not to be high on that horse. But the, you know, this year's three-year-old crop was really exceptional. And I think, I hope that doesn't get lost, even if American Pharoah wins on Saturday, you know, just how great, you know, we had American Pharoah, we had Beholder beating the boys, and I mean, there was just so much racing this year to enjoy, you know, through the Triple Crown and over the summer. But I've picked Keen Ice to upset American Pharoah in the Travers, and I'm just sort of surprised that, you know, people are expecting a bounce, and that's maybe, I'm trying to get some reward here for thinking the horse can continue to improve under Dale Romans and the connections that brought us Paddy Prado. I saw how they handled that horse at Colonial Downs when he was sweeping through the Virginia Derby and the Colonial Turf Cup back when those were major three-year-old turf races. And I just kind of like their approach. So I'm going to go Keen Ice here. I'm going to go American Pharoah. J. Sarge Reynolds is the chairman of our racing commission here in Virginia. And he owns about an eyelash of Honor Code, so I'm going to throw Honor Code in there coming up late. I think the draw for American Pharoah was great. I mean, he can just sit there. He can basically do whatever he wants. You know, he can see everybody other than maybe Honor Code, who I just don't think will have enough late.
Well, there you have it. It sounds like a general feeling that it's American Pharoah, but Nick Hine taking a stand there with Keen Ice in the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Grade 1 mile and a quarter, $5 million extravaganza. we're approaching the end here, so let's turn our attention quickly, let's say 2 minutes each, to anything you want to call attention to on the two Breeders' Cup days, a long shot, a best bet, an exotic play. And once again, to avoid being yelled at by Derby Bill, Linda Dougherty, ladies first, what are you thinking of?
Well, there's a horse on Friday's card, and there's one on Saturday's that I'm going to say are going to be my two main horses that I like. And on Friday, in the Juvenile Phillies turf at 1 mile, I really like Catch a Glimpse. And I know Mark Cassie is 0-4 in the Breeders' Cup, but maybe this is the year that he finally gets his first win with this filly. And I just was very impressed with her winning the Natalma at Bine, and I'm just going to pick her with Florent Giroux on. I just thought that maybe the stars are aligning for Mark this time around. So I'm going to bet her, and I'm also going to box her with actually two Billy Mott horses in here. One is 30-1. It's Gliding By. She's first-time Lasix, and actually she was sold after her maiden win, and she was put in Billy Mott's barn. So I like her a lot to clunk up for second or third. And then also Billy's got a horse called Harmonize in here who won the Jessamine, and I'm going to use her. So that's Friday. And then Saturday, I really like Greenpoint Crusader. That horse really caught my eye, and just like the way he won his last race, and he's another one of my key bets on Saturday. So
he's in the Juvenile, is that right?
In the Juvenile, yeah, I'm sorry. But I have to say that I usually don't do well in Breeders' Cup days. It's one of my main betting days, but I usually don't make any money. Maybe this will be the year I finally come out ahead.
That's the spirit. Gary Quill, what's your big guarantee of the weekend or other play?
Well, I don't know about guarantees, but it's funny, you know, every year it seems like the pick fives, pick fours, pick sixes, you know, just pay, retirement plan figures. But yet you talk and you hear all the buzz about some of these different horses, the Europeans and all that. And it's like, we're looking at, chalk about three or four of these races. So, that's not going to happen, but I'm always looking for a price. So I stand by my pick in the Distaff with Stellar Win. You know, not being a homer, that she ran it well. But I, like Nick even said, this horse has not run a bad race. She had tons of excuses in the Oaks. And the pace scenario sets up perfectly for her. Other than her, it's funny, both races that Linda had mentioned, I like horses in. In the Juvenile, I actually like number 4, Unbridled Outlaw. If you go back and look at the race in the Iroquois, which everybody says, oh, there's nothing in the Iroquois, the horse was just, it says checked hard at 7/16 and 5/16. Well, checked hard could be actually called stopped. I mean, the horse came to a stop twice in the race. Somehow, in mid-stretch, still wanted to run on. So the jock said, okay, let's go. And he got up for third. I mean, with a clean trip, he's right there. My only concern is, right, the horse is owned by the same owners as Brody's Cause, who's one of the favorites. Corey Lannery had his choice, and he went with Brody's Cause. Maybe that was the obvious choice, but I don't know. Mike Smith, Hall of Famer, but I'm not a big fan of Mike these days. That's not going to sway me away from him. And I agree with Linda with the Green Point Crusader. Looked great in the morning this week, so a 4-3 for me in that go round, and I like in the Juvenile Philly turf. I actually like Sapphire's Kitten, number 7, lost to Harmonize. Just wouldn't go away. Harmonize looked like it's going to blow by Sapphire Kitten, and those two are the only ones who it was at Keeneland. So for prices, I mean, Sapphire Kitten is 10-1, and Unbridled Outlaw is 15-1. So by any stretch of the imagination, they're not best bets or locks, but every Breeders' Cup, there's prices to be had, and so I'm fishing for prices, and they're the two that I'm going for.
All right, could be day makers there from GQ, Gary Quill. Nick Hahn, you're down there. What are you looking at?
Oh, I'm just going to be amazed at the atmosphere if American Pharoah pulls it off. You wonder if it's going to be like New York with a half hour of applause or you know, what they may do if he actually wins this. It'll be an unprecedented win. I think Gary kind of touched on something. All you need, and Linda too, is all you need is maybe one or two, Zacta boxes to come through. On a weekend like this, you just have to win maybe one or two races, and that can carry you a long way through the Breeders' Cup card. Kind of an interesting play I'm going to be playing around with a little bit. You can do a dollar across the board, and I might try and find some price horses to do that with, just in case something silly happens, like American Pharoah not making the money, or a horse like Golden Horn, who's going up against the Pizza Man. Golden Horn in the turf is like Europe's American Pharoah coming over here. And then you have the Pizza Man, who's maybe we'll flip the sprinklers on overnight just to make sure that turf is by Saturday for the Pizza Man. How about that, Derbyville? I did get a food reference. I kind of like the Pizza Man. And here kind of finally, and I don't know what to really make of this. I'm just kind of realizing this as I look at my Knicks Picks tip sheet. But for whatever reason, pure sensation, cavorting, secret gesture, private zone, esoteric exaggerator. I may be going a little Freudian here or something, with the names of some of these horses that I picked. Maybe handicapping had nothing to do with it, and I need to go see my sex therapist or something. But it's going through the teeth and figuring out who I have on top. It may be a great day in more than one way.
I think we might be safer, heading back to Derby Bill and getting some food references. Bill, the Pizza Man?
Yeah, the Pizza Man's good at Arlington, but I don't think he likes that deep dish type pizza. So I don't think Keeneland's up his alley, so to speak. So I'm going to lay off the Pizza Man there, and I'm going to go with some good Kentucky bourbon and just go on a liquid diet all day to take care of the Kentucky sponsors like Knob Creek, Maker's Mark, Jim Beam, and Woodford Reserve. That'd be a nice superfecta for me tomorrow. But I really need to hit it off good, and the objection's off to you. You did well with Linda and letting her go first. So the
Thank
objection
you.
Has been the objection has been disallowed.
The result stands official.
Yes, it's official. Linda was first, and appropriately. And the first thing I need to do is hit the first Breeders' Cup race, race six, Friday, because there's hundreds of little kids depending on Halloween candy, and I have to score early to fill up the bucket so I can make them happy when they come by here after the Breeders' Cup. Falling on Halloween, this is unbelievable. The lowest takeout in the history of the Breeders' Cup for the gamblers, this is just, it doesn't get any better. I mean, 16% takeout and 19% on all other exotic wagers here. It's a gambler's feast, so to speak, here, and might be more appropriate on Thanksgiving than Halloween, but I can't imagine the sights Nick's going to see on Halloween Day in Kentucky with the Kentucky football team playing Tennessee that night, too. So the Jack Daniels will be mixing with the bourbon down there. So what an atmosphere. I hope they bring it back to Keeneland before I'm pushing up Daisy somewhere. But hit a bomb in the first race here. The juvenile race, which is unbelievable, 14 horses in the juvenile race to start off the Breeders' Cup. So there'll be a lot of people throwing tickets down and getting a bad attitude in the first Breeders' Cup race. I'm going to use Hit a Bomb, the 14 horse. and try to break a trend there. And then using a horse behind him called Pass the Bar at about 20-1. So hopefully the trick-or-treaters will come through in the first race. And it's always good to start the first Breeders' Cup race off well. Obviously, it's for your pick four Friday is the key. The $1.5 million pick four races 6, 7, 8, and 9. You know, for the people that are getting home from work, what an offer there. $1.5 million pick four. The gamblers are just eating up Keeneland, and I just hope it comes back here and someday.
That was our handicapping roundtable on the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Thanks so much to Linda Doherty, Derby Bill Watson, Nick Hahn, and Gary Quill for giving us their expert insights. Let's hope that we can use them to unlock some profits at the windows during this upcoming Breeders' Cup weekend.
I am Frank Vespi, and I have been your host today on the Off to the Races podcast on the Racing Biz Radio. Thank you so much for being a part of it today and every day. Thanks, as always, to our sponsors, the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, the Virginia Equine Alliance, the Maryland Jockey Club, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Maryland Million Limited, Comlow Insurance, Street Magician, Facing Tipton Company, Maryland Horse Industry Board, West Virginia Breeders Classics. Thanks so much to all. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in.
We will look forward to seeing you during the week to come on theracingbiz.com. And next week on our podcast as we go off to the races on the Racing Biz Radio.